This is Radio City Talk.
And Maya is one of the most special guests I've had on full time here. We've only been doing this for a couple of weeks. Is the man who's sitting in front of me, a man who's won many different trophies, specifically with Liverpool, a man who's won FA Cups, league titles as well, a man who's played for not only Everton, Villa, Liverpool, and a selection of managerial experiences in there as well. Steve McMahon, you're very welcome to full time.
Pleasure, and what an introduction. Thank you.
My absolute pleasure. But let's start off by talking about how you got this wonderful tan on your head. A man from Merseyside shouldn't be this well tanned. What do you do with yourself these days? Because the pundit chair is now where you find Steve McMahon these days, isn't it?
I call it sunburn, but you call it a tan, so that's okay.
See, in Ireland, we go from blue to white and sometimes a little bit of red, but I think it's a good glow.
Okay, it must be good cream. Anyway, yes, I've been living in Asia for 14 years now. I mean, lots of people don't realise that. You know, I went out first to coach the new A-League, Perth Glory, and it didn't last too long. For whatever reason, it wasn't ready for me and I wasn't ready for Australia. So on the way back, cut a long story short, I stopped for 10 days in Singapore to do a TV, doing all the Premier League, and that was 14 years ago.
You fell in love with it, yeah?
Yes, they offered me a contract, and Singapore is a wonderful place. I was there 11 years, and then I got offered a new contract in Malaysia, which you do, full-time Premier League football, plus I've got an academy, football academy there that I'm technical director of, which I oversee, and we get wonderful teams over. We have two major tournaments per year. Like, for argument's sake, last year, just quickly, we had Porto, Valencia, Liverpool, Tottenham, Internacional from Brazil, Estudiantes from Argentina, and we have local teams, Chonburi from Thailand. I mean, so it's a proper tournament with proper teams in, and under-19s, under-18s stroke under-19s.
So with you not playing or managing at the moment, do you feel like you get your football impetus from that? You get what you need as a professional, ex-professional footballer?
Well, yeah, ex. I'm glad you said ex, because that's right. And people in this day and age, they go from one extreme to the other, where they play football and then they stop. And then they have no afterlife. With me, I was very fortunate. I was weaned off football in terms. So I played and then went from Manchester City to Swindon Town as player manager. So I was fortunate enough to, it was hard work, but I was player manager. Then when I couldn't get out of bed of a morning because of my back and the injuries, so I went to just manager. So I put me player's hat away and went to manager. And then I moved from there and I went to Blackpool and I went abroad, worked for Sky. So if you can't be a player, be a coach. If you can't be a coach, be a manager. And I've lucky enough that it was player, coach, manager, player, coach. And then after that, if you want to still keep in the football, then your TV.
Yeah, you've kind of done the footballing pyramid, if you like, entirely. So if you take all of them together, right, we'll get on to your early career and stuff in a minute. But if you take all of them together, right, would it be fair to say playing was your favourite?
Absolutely. It's the best feeling in the world. Just playing and obviously winning games is the best thing in the feeling in the world. And unfortunately, this day and age, money gets in the way of playing. That's the only way I look at it. It never did in my day. I just played and played because I wanted to play football. Now, money gets in the way of actually enjoying football more so.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Full Time on Radio City Talk, and they are the dulcet tones of now international football correspondent and pundit and former Liverpool and Everton midfielder Steve McMahon. Steve, so it all started, right? I was saying earlier on to some of the other presenters here and the producers, I had kind of, I think, blanked out in my head your time with Everton. Being a Liverpool supporter, right, who comes from a family of Everton supporters, right? It's a strange one for me, and coming from Ireland. I went back to do a bit of research over the last couple of days, and then I went back to look at some of the stuff you'd done for Everton, and then it sort of clicked with me again. And I went, yes, I do remember. Was it 100 times you played for Everton?
Bang on 100 games.
And you were a ball boy to start off with.
And captain for Everton.
Yeah, that's incredible.
I was a ball boy behind a goal when Bob Latchford scored his 30 goals. It's a long time ago, but I was, I think, 77. Memory serves me right. I was sitting behind the Gladys Street end when Bob Latchford scored his 30 goals. Now, that won't happen again, I don't think, for a long time. I think Lineker got close to her, or maybe did it. But, yeah, I was brought up in Evertonia, right through. Father's, the family, everything. So it was one of the greatest honours for me to first play for Everton and then captain Everton. And it was such... I don't know, it was just such an honour to do so. And that's what I said before. Unfortunately, money gets in the way later on.
How did you make the jump from ball boy to professional footballer? I know it's not just as easy as that, but how did you get spotted? And where along the way did you know that there was a career in football for you?
Well, I always wanted. I didn't think of anything else. Football. And the reason I was a ball boy is because I was involved with Everton's youth set up an academy and youngsters, and I was 12-year-old at the time when I joined Everton. And a scout called Tom Fairfowl, I don't know, God bless me, he's not alive now, but he got me into football, introducing me to Everton, and the rest is history, I suppose. But because you're a ball boy, they put you behind a goal, especially if you, or the better youngsters were behind a goal, the worst ones were on the side. So
you were the best ball boy as well, were you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, of course. But no, what it brings to you is experience. You sit there, the atmosphere. As a youngster, when you watch a game live, but sitting behind a goal, thinking that this could be me.
Yeah, the hunger grows then, does it?
Oh, but quicker.
Yeah.
You just want to get there as quick as you can. And I was fortunate that at the age of 18, I made my debut for Everton at Roker Park. We got beat 3-1, but... Nevertheless, it was something that I'll never forget.
How do you best remember your time at Everton?
My debut, obviously. Captain Everton, one of the youngest captains. And sadly leaving. I remember it was the saddest day, one of my career, leaving, having to. Well, not having to, is it because I had no choice. Basically, Howard Kendall didn't give me that. Well, he did give me a choice. And I don't want to go into great detail at this minute because it's disrespectful to Howard and for obvious reasons. But the Evertonians don't know the truth. And it's not for me to start judging. But it wasn't right. And Everton should have come out and said we needed the money, basically. Which he did. They got £350,000 for me at the time, which doesn't sound a lot at the moment. But it was £350,000 that Everton needed. And if they'd just said, because it was freedom of contract then, remember.
Yeah.
And I got offered a contract that was derogative, that was just told me that they wanted to sell me.
And did you feel when you were playing at that time you were in the top of your game? Did you feel
massive.
you were playing the best football you had up to that point in your life?
No, there was a lot more. That's even worse because there was a lot more to come from me. I was only 21. I mean, better days were ahead of me, but the potential was there. I was in England 21s. I was local. I was captain. There was so much ahead of me. So that was the more reason I was so disappointed that I never offered the deal that I should have got offered.
In a second, we'll talk about exactly how that sat in your head when you got the opportunity to sign for Liverpool, come home, so to speak. But 75 appearances for Villa isn't bad. It's 3 seasons worth now, anyway. At least maybe 4 seasons worth. How was your time at Villa?
That was only in 18 months. That was so.
That's incredible because the amount of football that was played then.
Yeah, we played. You talk about saturated football. We played like three times a week at least. I could have gone straight to Liverpool. True. I went from, because my freedom of contract, Everton, me and my father, went over to speak to Liverpool, Bob Paisley. I would have been Bob Paisley's last signing. And whatever, I'd spoke to Villa and whatever any club, they said, Liverpool said to me, whatever any club offered you, we'll double it. We'll double our wages. So when people call me greedy and I left for the money, that's not quite right. In fact, it's not right at all. I didn't go for the money. And I knew that the problems I would have moving straight from Everton to Liverpool would be enormous.
So in the back of your head, did you always know, evidently, that there would be a move to Liverpool at some stage in your career? Is that what you felt when you were at Villa?
No, I didn't. I didn't go that route thinking that I'm going to get straight back to Liverpool. But in between, after and I just come back after the 18 months, and I was, they just give me the Player of the Year award, and I'm like, okay, fantastic. I've still got another 2 years left on my contract, so to speak. And I get a call out of the blue, and I thought someone was taking the mickey. I was going to say something else there, but I can't do it on
the afternoon radio.
Like, yes, I can't do it. No, it's not. But it was genuine. It'd say, would you like to come and join Liverpool? And we can't tell you now. And it was after the Heysel Stadium disaster. And I said, well, is this real first, this conversation? He said, yes. We can't tell you. And okay.
So you didn't know, in essence, who the manager was going to be, because no. Kenny hadn't been put in place then. So you knew something was afoot?
Of course, without naming who actually rang me.
He's
on my
got
telephone.
Just let you know, folks, he's got a cheeky grin on his face, so we'll not dig down too much deeper into that.
No, well, I mean, I suppose you'd probably guess who actually phoned me.
Tell me.
Well, it was the next Liverpool manager. So when I realised after a couple of weeks they've got an announcement to make and Kenny Dalglish is going to be the new Liverpool player manager, then the penny dropped.
Yeah.
As to why the conversation took place.
So, in essence, Dalglish would have been a fellow professional and friend, obviously. So, pick up the phone, give you a call, listen, would you come to Liverpool? You just thought that was...
He wasn't a friend of mine at the time. No, he was an enemy because he played for Liverpool. I played for Everton. So, he wasn't a friend at the time, no.
So, let me just jump forward a little bit. Oh, sorry, jump back a little bit, I suppose. Where does your loyalties as a Blue, where does it come into it? Or where is your head? Because, like you did say, it's probably an 18-month process. Now, granted, you said that going to Villa wasn't just a stopgap. It's genuinely where you wanted to go in your career. Mm. But did you think that going to Liverpool was an inevitability, so it was easier to do, and you stopped thinking about yourself as a Blue? Or was it a matter of fact of, look, it's my career, I need to be in control of my career? Or was it just a good move for you?
It was a fantastic move in the end, I've got to say. It was hard to make.
How hard?
I cried my eyes out when I left Everton. Really did, and that's, I'm not ashamed to say so. But when people know the facts and why, then they can understand. But I don't regret it at all. And it was, I think, slightly made easier because of the reaction of the Blues to me, because I was hated as soon as I left. And so one, it's like a marriage that goes really wrong. And when you get divorced, there's a good one and a bad one. Does that sound right? I don't know.
Yeah, no, it makes sense.
You know, rather than like, let's do it properly. It wasn't. It was all wrong. That the leaving of Everton was wrong, and it made people despise me, hate me, call it what you will. So the leaving of it wasn't good. So when me coming back and scoring on my first game back to Goodison for Liverpool against Everton didn't exactly endear me any more to the fans.
Could you compare for younger listeners who don't remember that far back? The closest thing I can sort of think about is Fernando Torres leaving Liverpool to go to Chelsea. Now, he has said he's never ever been able to come out publicly and say what happened. But like you said there now, something just wasn't right?
Yes.
Between him and the owners and the manager at the time. He went away to Chelsea, and the Liverpool fans to this day probably are not overly enamoured with him. Some are, some aren't. Is that the closest, comparison you can make?
No, probably worse than that. They just didn't, because of the way it was handled through Howard and the Everton people at the time, they should have been honest enough to say, listen, we want to sell you. We need the money to reinvest in players. Then fine, it's out. It's out there and it's in the public domain. But not to say that he's been offered a lucrative contract, he's turned it down for pastures greener and he wants more money and he's greedy and blah, 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 blah. That's not the case. It's absolutely not the case. And there was no reason why that should have happened.
I am joined by former Everton, Villa, Liverpool, Swindon, when we see Man City, a former Manchester, I was going to say Man City manager, but Swindon manager, Blackpool manager, we could go on all day. Steve McMahon, thank you very much for joining me and indeed the people of Merseyside this afternoon. Now, we've already talked about your time at Everton and Villa, and then it started, right? You got a sneaky phone call at one stage from some young gentleman called Kenneth Dalglish. He hadn't yet been revealed as the new Liverpool manager.
I think you've worked that one out already. yes.
So how did that, when you heard that he was the new Liverpool manager, the player manager, and you knew you had had a chat with him previous, as you said, not a friend, he was an enemy then. When did you know that this was going to be the next part of your career officially?
Straight away, when the announcement was made, I had to then make decisions because I knew that it was going to happen. And it was how I got out of my contract with Aston Villa, given that I was only there 18 months and I had 4 years left. So I had to then go into, and again, this is a true story, I had to go into the management and say, listen, I'm not happy. And I said to Kenny, how do I do this? What do I do? I've just got plenty of year. I'm actually happy here. And he said, blame your wife.
I love it.
So everybody blames their wife, don't they? So I had to say, okay, listen, I'll go with that. So I goes in and said, oh, listen, I need to leave. Why? The wife, not happy. Every time I come home, she's crying her eyes out. So, well, that's the usual anyway. She's coming home with a crying. Anyway, I said, she needs to get back home.
Non-football related, that happens sometimes.
No, she's homesick. It's nothing to do with football. Yeah. she's homesick. Bearing in mind, Liverpool Villa is about an hour and a half away, drive. So I had to go in and say, that's an RO. So the manager was very respectful and said, okay, no problem. We'll do our best. And I said, okay. So one day I see the Rolls Royce coming down, Doug Ellis coming down the driveway, training ground, and he says, right, okay. I get called in off the training ground, the deal's done. You want to go back to the Northwest, all sorted. I thought, oh, thank God, you know, it hasn't gone too big. So you pick your boots up, you get your stuff sorted out, and you're going to meet big Ron Atkinson at Old Trafford. And the deal's sorted. Alan Brazil's coming here. You're going to Manchester United. And I started choking on my water that was there. And then they called me bluff. Like, it was done. The deal was done with Man United. But I said, I don't want to go to Manchester United. I'm sorry. I'd rather go a bit further northwest than Manchester United.
So did they? So the my wife wants to go home. Does that blow that story out of the water? But there's still an M62 in the way.
It is, because I wanted to go another 45 minutes closer to home. So it didn't, but it blew my cover, basically.
Yeah. And then, so did you have to hold your hands up and go, listen, I'm going to Liverpool and that's where it is?
No, it just chased me out of the office. They knew exactly what was going on. So I had to then speak to Liverpool and say, listen, you need to do this deal straight away. For 2 weeks, I trained with the youngsters. And then the deal was done, effectively. It was like, let's sort this out. And in the September of, there's a song in there somewhere, is it? Late September, back in whatever.
Then followed two, sorry, go ahead.
No. And so I just got the call, went in September, I went down, had the medical, deal was done.
204 appearances, 29
goals. There's more. 30 goals.
30 goals. Yeah,
you're probably just going league stats.
I'm going leagues, yeah.
I scored 50 goals in total for Liverpool. And 279 games or whatever.
So give me your highlights. Give me the best goal you ever scored for Liverpool.
Apart from Everton, you mean? Mm-hmm. I'm not supposed to say that.
No, you say work away.
No.
This is an open forum for
Yes,
you.
No, it's not. Well, one of us. I was lucky enough to score. I think it was 4 goals against Everton in matches. Which is quite rare. Manchester United was a special goal. At Anfield. Wonderful strike from 25 yards, and always scoring against Manchester United was great. So he got pleasure out of scoring against Manchester United, as well as rejecting them as a player.
So if you look, I look down your career, and you know the success is 3 league titles, 2 FA Cups. Obviously, there was the heartbreak against Wimbledon. I think when you were there, first of all, you didn't make the FA Cup final squad your first year there.
No, I did.
You made the squad, but you never got on the pitch.
Only because that's the last year, I ripped my hamstring in the semi-final against Southampton at White Hart Lane. And that was me out at the cup final, regardless. But I managed to get myself into some sort of shape and fitness. And it was the last year of the only one substitute in the cup final. And I was substitute on the day. So yeah. Kenny made me substitute. Whether it was sympathy vote, I don't know, but I was the 12th man in that final because I'd ripped my hamstring in the semis. You do get a medal, so I did, and that was Yeah, it was hard. It was hard not to have just got on the pitch, you know. But
so when you look at Liverpool now these days, it has changed dramatically. Anfield has changed dramatically. Mm-hmm. The amount of foreign players that have come into the teams changed dramatically. Wages and finances have changed dramatically as well. Mm-hmm. What do you make of the modern day Liverpool when you watch on? And have you now got split loyalties? Are you a Liverpool and Everton fan now?
I'm a football supporter. You know, I have to be as neutral as I can possibly be, but constructive as well. So when I see Liverpool don't play well, I have to say it the way it is. Mm. Or when I see Brendan come out and talk about Liverpool, saying, oh, fantastic, and we give 100% and stuff. Not for me. I didn't know what game he was watching. And now
for so many Liverpool fans as well, yeah.
Yeah, of course. Because Liverpool and Everton supporters are probably the most educated footballing supporters in the world.
So when the news came through recently, I suppose in the last 18 months, that a young German by the name of Jurgen Klopp was going to take over at Liverpool. First of all, what were your expectations and what have you made of Klopp so far?
I'm not disappointed in what he's achieved so far. Well, in fact, he hasn't achieved anything, I suppose, because eighth in the league is actually not brilliant. Two cup finals, not winning any of them, it's not brilliant. But his whole demeanour, his whole way, and it seems to suit Liverpool Football Club. The supporters love him. And I think there's better times ahead. Whether they can get to the top four again. Everyone's expecting Liverpool to be top four. I'm not too sure.
What did you make of the signings? Do you think that's at least pushing it towards that? Or are you like the rest of us?
Are they world class? Are they going to...
That's the question.
But that is the big question. Mane, maybe, possibly pace, power, scored goal against Liverpool and done very well. Wijnaldum.
Van Alden,
yeah. I mean, Newcastle, I'm not too sure he's...
Has he got the bottle for it?
I'm not too sure he has. Mm. So all he'd ask the question is, have they improved their squad dramatically? The answer's probably no. Plus the fact you've got to the mix this year. This is a subplot in the plot in the Premier League. Managers, Conte, Chelsea, how's he going to do? He's got money to spend, money to burn. Mourinho for United, how's he going to do? He's got money to burn. You've got Wenger still in the mix, very much so. Koeman now at Everton. Ranieri, how's he going to do in the follow-up to the Premier League?
Pep
Guardiola, Manchester City.
It's incredible that the managers in the league are phenomenal this year.
Well, this is where there's a subplot. So it used to be about the players. I think this year is going to be all about the managers. Mm. How they perform, what formations, what players they buy. It's going to be intriguing. And that's what football's about.
And what about Koeman? I was just going to ask you that about Ronald Koeman taking over at Everton. It looks like Everton could be stepping on to the next level. No significant signings as of yet. What do you make of that?
I just, first of all, not just Koeman. Everton needed a buyer. They needed investment. Bill Cronwright's been saying that for many, many years to compete with the rest of the teams.
You were involved. You at one stage, I think it was 2008. You were in and around and about, thinking about investing a few quid in Everton yourself. Was that true?
Well, not my. I haven't got enough money. Not my money.
Sorry, your company's else's money. Yeah.
If somebody else's money, it wasn't mine. Because all my advice to people is, why not Everton? Everybody was going for these clubs, and Cardiff's and Leicester's and this and that. Everton's one of the best clubs in the world football in terms of support, the training facilities, the youngsters to bring through on a yearly basis, the passion, the commitment. I just asked the question, why is it taking so long for a major investor?
What about the players who play in your position, both in red and blue at the moment? Look at Barkley for Everton, didn't get a game in the Euros. What do you make of him, and do you think he'll be blue for much longer?
He's definitely got talent. He's a different player to me. But talented beyond belief. You've got to play him in the right system. Whether his head gets shaken with monies and agents and stuff, I don't really know. But he's got to be more consistent. You know he's talented. Everyone knows that. But you can't switch it on and off like a tap.
Same with Jordan Henderson?
Jordan Henderson is what you see is what you get. He's no frills.
That's kind of like you, though, in many ways. Would you compare him closer to you than the likes of Barkley?
If you can compare Henderson with me, I'm walking out of the studio straight away. I scored 50 goals for Liverpool, remember? 50 goals. If Henderson played for another 15 years, he wouldn't get close to that.
Right, so...
We won't get close to that.
So what Liverpool need to do in the middle of the park to make it Steve McMahon-esque?
They need leaders. They need to get people in there with leaders, centre-halves maybe, a couple of midfield players. And they need to start scoring goals all over the park. When these midfield players drive me crazy, they really do, to say, well, no, I'm a holding midfield player, so I'm not allowed to get over the halfway line and try and at least have a shot at goal. And then as the midfield player says, well, I don't want to defend, I just want to play in the hole, the number 10. So he's not allowed to run back over the halfway line and tackle, and the number 4, the sitter, as it was, he's not allowed to go forward. Well, what are you allowed to do as a midfield player?
You blame modern-day football for that, or individual
Probably.
Clubs, or what?
Modern-day football, coaches, the way they think. You know, 4-4-2 with a little bit of variation in there. What's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with it.
Right. And before we came into the studio, we came on air, we had a lovely conversation, which we will leave. We won't come back to that. But it was a conversation about Sam Allardyce. And he's a good friend of yours.
Yes,
Big Sam. So what do you make of his new managerial role? Sort of, is it the top job in the country still?
Listen, everyone just associates Sam because of Blackburn and Bolton and Sunderland, unfashionable clubs. But what a job he did for them.
Every single one is a success. That's what I said. There's success story after success story. Not measured necessarily in trophies, but there were success stories. But what about his style of play? And can England adapt to that, and will the fans get behind it?
Do you think he's going to play the style of play he played at Blackburn for England? No, he's not. Because you've got better players. So your style and your way you play is down to your players. Everything is about your players. You're only as good as your players. They will get you the sack. They will get you promotion. They will get you trophies. So you're only as good as your players you have at your disposal. Now, if Big Sam's got, and he has got all the credentials, because talk about the modern day sort of, the analyse and scrutinise and talk about fitness levels and dietitians and nutritionists, everything else. Sam's been doing that for years. Many, many years. And that's why he's got his success with these clubs.
So have England got England players got the right mentality now moving forward? My big argument was the fact that England don't have a team mentality. They've got a mentality of 11 individual players. And pundits are determined to say this thing, world-class players, time and time and time again. Portugal didn't have 11 world-class players.
Correct.
And they won it. Iceland didn't have 11 world-class players. They had a good tournament.
Wales.
Wales, potentially. Four world-class players in there. Ramsey, Bale, and pick another one from somewhere. So do England have to get this team mentality and work on that? And is Sam the right man to do that?
Yes, on both accounts. England have to get... When you go away, England, you have to be a team. That's what you have to do. Not individuals.
Mm.
There's too many side issues with England, and the press don't let them get on with it is a big issue as well. And Republic of Ireland is a perfect example, Wales, of togetherness. And Ronnie Wheeler was my roommate, and he used to go away at Republic of Ireland and come back with wonderful stories and how fantastic it was to go away and play for Republic.
Yeah.
I used to come back and say, I was going to say something else.
I love the way you keep catching
yourself. Yeah, I do. Almost. But
you
I know
can tell he's a professional broadcaster.
But I know it's live. But I used to come back and go, actually, I didn't really enjoy myself.
Yeah.
So although I was very proud and honoured to play for England, I didn't really enjoy it. I didn't enjoy the fact that I was away for so long with a bunch of guys that were just all over the place. So it wasn't great.
I'm Connor Phillips, joined by the ex-Liverpool and Everton legend, former England midfielder as well, Steve McMahon, this afternoon to talk. Well, we've spoken at length about your career and how you see football going at the moment, but tell us about Million Dollar Feet, because it sounds like a superb initiative. It's getting young kids playing football, and potentially there's pro contracts and stuff organised towards the tail end of this. Give us an insight as to exactly what it is.
It's giving an opportunity to youngsters that in other circumstances wouldn't have it. So basically it's 2,000 youngsters from each state. There's 5 different states in Malaysia. So there's 10,000 youngsters that we're trialling, we're looking at. And then with
10,000 youngsters?
Yes, 10,000 youngsters from the age of 10 to 14. It's backed by lots of important people, including Currency Matters. That's what I'm here for. And it's just a great incentive for youngsters to the ones you don't think they can play or they don't have a chance, they call them kampongs in Asia. So the ones in the local villages, not the major cities, the little villages that nobody sees and nobody hears about. So we're dragging them from the kampongs with no shoes on their feet. Some of them maybe not have shoes. And we're seeing if they've got the potential to become a footballer or give them the opportunity to become a footballer. And what we'll end up doing is, in the grand finals are in Kuala Lumpur in November. And then we're picking the two lucky youngsters, bring them to Europe. We're not quite sure where yet. It might be Spain, it might be the UK. And then we're going to showcase them. Well, we're not going to take them around clubs. We're going to put them in a team, and let scouts come and have a look at them. Because Million Dollar Arm is a movie. Now, it's based on that concept, Million Dollar Arm.
That's the cricketing movie, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was the baseball. It was Indian. Mm. And they wanted, because the cricketers, they wanted to find who's got the best arm.
Yeah.
So what better way to do it? And we want to find out who's got the best feet.
It's so easy for footballing talent to fall through the cracks. You can imagine the amount of players who were exceptionally good and would walk their way onto any of the big teams, but just don't get the chance.
Yeah, great question. I mean, for whatever reason, some develop a bit later maybe. They maybe don't get on with the manager that they work with. They could have played in a different position. And there's a lot of things and reasons why.
But why did you get your chance? How come you made it as a player? Was it down to was there any luck involved, or was it pure pigheadedness?
It was pure dedication and maybe being a pain in the ass. I was too small. I was too small to be, but I made myself a player. I had the talent. There's no two ways about it. And Colin Harvey was my main coach, my first coach at Everton, and he made me. He pushed me. I was dedicated. When there was a bus strike for 2.5-3 weeks, I used to get on a bike and cycle to training as a young pro, 15 miles there and 15 miles back before training and after training. And that's what I needed to do. I had no money. My parents didn't have any cars. How was I going to get to training?
So what
buy a bike.
What would you say to a young professional who's listening now, or someone who's at 12 or 13 years of age, right? They've captained their school team. Mm. Everyone says, you've got a little bit of something. And now maybe things are starting to wane, shake sideways. Maybe they're the other half, the other sex, the opposite sex, starts to come in.
Yes.
And, the wandering eye, and then football falls by the wayside. If there are any of those people listening, or indeed parents of those people listening now, what would you say to them?
Well, if football falls by the wayside because of other things you've mentioned.
Let's call them extenuating circumstances.
Yes, fantastic. If that is the way, then you shouldn't be a footballer. Okay? The point I'm trying to make is you don't get sidetracked. Dedication, commitment, punctuality, diets, you name it. You got my friends when I left school weren't my school friends. Sad, but my friends now became my footballing friends. Mm. You have to sacrifice. You have to sacrifice almost everything to become a footballer. And your girlfriend. Yeah, you can have a girlfriend when you're 18, 19, 20, when forever. And you don't have to go out with the guys when you're 16, 17 that you went to school with. It's no shame in saying, sorry, no, I want to be a footballer and I don't want to drink and I don't want to do this. No shame in that. Mm. But you get the society and the peer pressure that they feel as though they have to. So you've got to have all the ingredients to make a footballer, not just talent.
And do you think with million-dollar feet, you will become the surrogate parent, footballing parent to some of these youngsters? Or is that, in essence, what you'd like to do?
Well, you become their guardian for that short period of time, that's for sure. And when I was coaching and managing, we are their guardian. While they're in, and the youngsters especially, while they're in our care for whatever amount of time, we become their guardians. We are their parents, in effect. So we have to encourage them to do all the right things and eat the right food and be in at the right time, be at work at the right time. You go to the airport, Connor, you're late. What does the plane do? Does it wait for Connor because you're late? No, it doesn't. What does it do?
It's gone.
It's gone.
Like the career could be.
Like your career's gone. If you're not on time and you mess about and you do all the wrong things, then it won't happen for you, I'm afraid.
some questions for you coming in. Let me see. I'll do these sort of, quick fire. We don't really have to do them quick fire. We've a wee bit of extra time. Your hardest opponent you've ever played against internationally and club as well. I think that even for you to say that is going to be tough.
It is tough. But one of the opponents, we played in the World Cup in 1990. And we got to the semi-finals and we played Belgium. And I started the game, obviously, and Enzo Schifo played for Belgium. What a player. And Bobby Robson, too, in his wisdom, God bless him again, I mean, he actually thought I was a defensive midfield player. He thought that was my job and that's what I did. Which actually it wasn't, so I could get forward and score goals. Anyway, he told me to mark Enzo Schifo. I mean, within 10 minutes, I took him on his left foot, he put it on his right and then hit the bar. And then I took him, I said, OK, he's good on his right, so I'll take him on his left. And he'd done the same thing with his left foot. So I didn't know what to do with him. I didn't know what to stick or twist with him. Anyway, the moral of the story is, halfway through the second half, I gets the shepherd's hook, I gets dragged off. Who came on for me? You're not going to tell me, are you?
You tell me.
David Platt.
Oh, wow.
Well, and the rest is history, because he scores that wonder goal overhead kick.
So, that's right, yeah, in the world, yeah.
Absolutely, but everyone remembers David Platt for the overhead kick and the goal he scored against Belgium that got us through to the semi-finals. Nobody remembers poor little me who came off for him.
So because Schifo skinned you that day, you give David Platt his international opportunity and recognition?
I made him what he is today, yes.
Your best mate within any of the teams you played in?
Ronnie Whelan's up there. I was a roommate of Ronnie
for a legend,
a long time.
Isn't he?
Oh, he's fantastic, I love him. And the wives went to school together. Really?
Genuinely?
Yeah, genuinely went to school and went on holidays together and families, and so they've kept best mates forever.
So did you meet, were you responsible for the meeting of the wives, or was this complete coincidence that they knew each other, or how did that work?
It was a coincidence, really. It just because I played for Everton at the time, he played for Liverpool, and the two wives met, and the rest is history, I suppose. Jan Molby is amazing, really is. More of a scouser than I am.
Great man to be in the company of two.
Oh, he's top man. He's embraced Liverpool, what you have to do, and yeah, I love him. But there's lots and lots of great players, lots of good people out there.
Let me see. Robbie just sent us a tweet there now. Do you think Liverpool should sell Joe Allen something in around 13 million for 1 year left on his contract? Is that good money?
Take it. Snatch the hand off.
Why?
I don't think he does enough. It's okay.
But does he get
the
opportunities?
I think he had a very good.
Euros.
Mm. Very good Euros. So I think he's just not what Liverpool want.
But does he get the opportunities is the question I would ask. Does Klopp put him in?
He tries them, but there's only one position Joe Allen can play in. Mm-hmm. Is that a holding midfield player? Because he can't score goals. Can't. So you're one-dimensional and you've got to be more than that. You've got to be able to defend, score goals, create goals. And you've got to have the whole package. And if Liverpool want to go further, they have to get better than Joel.
And be ruthless in many ways.
Yes. And because you can't stand still. Standing still in football, it means you're going backwards.
You listen to Radio City Talk. This is Full Time. I'm Conor Phillips, joined by Liverpool, former Liverpool, Everton and England legend Steve McMahon. Steve, before we let you go, I know you're in a rush. You're rushing off to doing so many things. Can I have the Steve McMahon all-time five-a-side football team?
Five-a-side?
Right, so it's a five-a-side football team with a sixth player. It's a rolling sub. You're the rolling sub, okay? You don't necessarily start in your own five-a-side team,
okay.
Right? So you get to play with five other players from any walk of life. It can be someone you played with, played against. It can be someone you have revered in world football, modern or in years gone by. So I'll write this down. We'll tweet this out. So this is Steve McMahon's five-a-side side.
First one on the list for me, because he was my idol growing up, was Alan Ball. Okay. He was the player. Johan Cruyff.
Okay. It's not a bad side already.
Well, no, he'd be there 100%. I didn't see enough of George Best. I've heard about him, but so I can't really comment too much. I've got to put Schifo in there.
Okay. Is that just because he skinned you against Belgium?
I keep talking about how he murdered me.
Okay.
I know he wouldn't be there, and that would be Vinnie Jones wouldn't be on that list. That's for sure. Number four, Kenny Dalglish.
Kenny's in there. I thought he would be. Okay.
Number five. I mean, you've put me in a real.
This is why I asked the question.
Okay, it's a fantastic question. I've got to go with at the moment Lionel Messi.
And so Messi over Ronaldo, that would suggest.
Yes, but again, I'd put Ronaldo as the rolling sub, not me. I'd leave myself out.
No, you can't. You're in there. I'm sorry. You're in there. Okay. And that was a beautiful way of saying that Messi over Ronaldo. That was a politician's way of saying
it. Yes, it was.
That's probably the way I'd say it as well. If this $1 million feed project takes off and all goes well, you should be looking at maybe televising it maybe next year, and we'd be able to actually watch this and see it actually happen.
Yes, you will online. I'm making sure it gets done properly in the first season. And see, with this model, we've already been asked to take it to China. So it's just a model, you just drop it into different countries. So it works. So I want to get it off the ground running, make sure it's a success, and then it goes into a reality TV show, of course, yes.
Yeah, genuinely could sit and talk to you for 2 or 3 hours on this. It's been superb just hearing about, you know, your own highlights, the fact that you are one of the few who's played for the Blues and the Reds.
Captain both Everton and Liverpool, nobody's done that. Played with both player-manager for Everton and player-manager for Liverpool, nobody's done that.
I could look into your eyes, the smile in your face.
Yes, I'm proud of it. I'm very, very proud. Yeah.
All day. Genuinely, it's been brilliant having you in. Please, 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 if you're back in the city again, come back and see us, because it's been brilliant to see you. Just get yourself online, Google $1 million feet. All the stuff's going to be on there. 10,000 children. We're trying to get as many young people in Asia recognised and picked up by major footballing teams and give them the opportunity. And you had the opportunity, and I suppose you're doing it and bringing that opportunity to others. Steve McMahon, what does the future hold for you? You've got about 15 seconds.
I never really know. I'm here because Currency Matters have invited me. I'm doing things for people. I never knew I'd be an agent for 14 years. I never look any further than maybe a year or two. You never know what's around the corner. Take an opportunity is my advice to youngsters out there. Go for it. Go for your dream. If you want to do something, do it. Don't wait till it's too late.